there is no guarantee that the child friendliness will be thought of. And I mean, we have problems with traffic contra children, and in planning it's terrible because the law says that the children should be prioritized before cars, but in reality money talks and the cars will always be prioritized anyhow.
Thank you so much for listening to Urbanistica podcast. I am Mustafa Sharif, an urban planner, and you're more than welcome to join my big journey of exploring the making of smarter and more livable cities. Please don't forget to follow Urbanistica on the different social media platforms, and also let's connect on LinkedIn. Big thanks to Urbanistica podcast partner, AFRI. AFRI is an international engineering and design company providing sustainable solutions in the fields of energy, industry, and infrastructure. Are you ready for a new episode? Let's go for it.
I'm very honored. I'm very happy. Today we have a really great person to talk about a very interesting method. I have the pleasure to welcome Suzanne de Laval to Urbanistica podcast. Hey, and welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you very much. And I'm very pleased and honored to be asked to participate like this. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm happy that you give your valuable time to us. And I am very inspired by all the work you do. So thank you so much again. So how are you doing, Suzanne?
I'm very well, thank you. Although it's this COVID restrictions, but since I work at home mostly, it's not such a big difference for me.
Yeah. How is it going now in Stockholm? Is the city locked down, or how is the situation outside?
The situation outside is it's not such a big difference, because a lot of people, we are allowed to go out, and people go out in the streets, and they go out very much in the nature, making walks and in the parks. I mean, there are the restrictions in all shops and the restaurants. They are the owners of restaurants and shops are very disappointed about how the COVID is developing. And we are now waiting for the vaccine, of course. And I look forward to be able to see my grandchildren indoors. Now I can only meet them outdoors. And with the Swedish weather, it's not so fun.
Hopefully, yeah, let's hope. Hopefully you will meet them soon indoor and you will have fun. And again, I'm happy that you're here, and I would love to start with you and to know more about you. Tell me, tell the listeners about you. How would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us about your passion.
I'll start with, I am an architect, and I, in the 1970s, I educated to become an architect, and I've been working as architect and as planner, and then I've been working as a researcher for many years. Since 2001, I have my own Bureau Architecture Analyse, and that means analyze of the architecture, and I do evaluations of the built environment, and I made a doctoral degree at KTH, Royal Institute of Technology, 1997, and my PhD was about methods for evaluation of the built environment and methods where you have a dialogue with the users. So what I wrote a whole 2 books about, and then 20 years later, a third book about this walkthrough evaluation. I compared different evaluation methods, but I found that this walkthrough evaluation was easier and quicker and gave more results than other methods. So in my opinion, it was a winning concept for evaluation of the built environment. Mm. I mean, then Of course, you can do deeper research and combine different methods. But if you want a quick and as deep as possible evaluation, I think the walkthrough evaluation is a good opportunity.
Suzanne, tell us, this is a really great journey, and we will stop in the different stations in this journey. Tell me about your passion. What are you passionate about?
I'm passionate about creating opportunities for a good dialogue upon architecture. And I'm very passionate about the children learning about how to talk about architecture, because then they can become responsible citizens in the future. So I think it's a democratic need that you learn about how to speak about the built environment, and giving children tools for that, and also of course giving grown-up tools, because grown-ups in Sweden at least don't have the tools to speak about architecture. We have a terrible debate now about what is beautiful and what is ugly, and the people are very passionate about that, but that's not a discussion about architecture in the deep.
I understand, and also I am really in love with what you do, and you're one of the heroes that I'm looking up to because I'm passionate about this topic. But tell me, when did this passion started? I always focused. Was it a specific moment, or it just came by time when you were learning, doing research?
I started my education slightly after 1968 with all the demonstrations and revolts of youths. I was sort of, this democratic idea that people should participate in the planning has been something very natural for me all the time. And so my passion has, I have been thinking about how to use tools for dialogue with people in the planning process, even when I was studying architecture. But then during the years, it became, I was working and administrating the dialogue processes and thinking about what methods would be the best and so on. And then after almost 15, 20 years of practice, architectural practice, I started to do research in that environment.
Yeah, so it was in the early phases of your career and studies.
Yes, but it has become a passion the last, 25 years. Before, I just work with it and try to figure out things. But now, since 2000, when I have my own practice, I focus on doing that kind of projects. And I do it commercial, and I do it also on idealistic basics. I don't earn a lot of money on this, but still I have a very good, fantastic international network now. So it is becoming more and more popular.
Yes, of
I
course.
Like that.
Yeah, me too. And I like that you give your time to inspire us. So let's kick it off. And can you please tell us about the background of the method, walkthrough method, the evaluation? What's the background? What is it about?
Yeah, the background comes from the democratic ideas of the early 70s or late 60s in Great Britain and in New Zealand, and also in the America, researchers on different universities started to do evaluation, and they the walkthrough evaluation was sort of born. And in Sweden we call it gåtur, and that's a Danish word that means to make a promenade or walk. So and the method is also called walks and walkthrough. I started in the early 90s with my research, and compared walkthrough with other methods. And the walkthrough is when you do it, it's you do a walk in a special area. It could be indoors, it could be outdoors. The method is the same, and you stop at certain chosen places and make notes, and what is good at this place, what is bad at this place, or if you have any suggestions for to improve the place. I've also been doing it with people with different handicaps, and then you can have the fourth question: how would you make this more perfect for wheelchairs, or for if you're blind or something like that? So very few questions, but you write freely with your own words what you think, and then either on the spot I go walk around with a little microphone and tape recorder, and I ask them to read to me what they've been writing. And then I after the walkthrough, either we do the walkthrough and then sit down in a room and have a dialogue, or we do it standing together at the spot and have this dialogue about what people like and what they don't like about the different spots. And then I collect all their notes, and I have on my tape recorder what they've been saying. And so I make a documentation of the walk. And I usually take pictures if it's okay. They always have to write a paper.
Agreement, yes.
If you are doing walkthrough with children, it's very, very, very important that you have agreement from the parents, of course. And of course, if they don't allow pictures, you can do it without pictures. And if you, in the documentation, I want to have pictures, but if the people don't agree, I can take pictures just of the environment with no one, or from the back, so you see people standing. So you can solve the problem like that. And I call this a dialogue method. And if you want to have a dialogue, you should not have more than 12 people in the group, because I mean, if the group is bigger than that, it's very hard to have a dialogue. That's also a problem when you go with children, of course, because the easiest way to have a group of children is to go to a school class and ask, could we do this kind of walkthrough? And then it's from my experience, the whole class would like to do the walkthrough, and they are usually 25 to 30 students. So then you cannot do this dialogue that I do with grown-ups in the planning situation, but I ask the school children to go two and two. So then we have a sort of smaller group, and one is writing and the other one is speaking of the two children. So and with the school children, I never get so much time that I can sit down in the classroom. I usually only get 1 hour. So I do the dialogue with the children outdoors or where we are with my tape recorder. And we play that it's radio, and they like that very much. So they write what they think, and then I come and, what did you write? And then they tell what they wrote, and then I can do some questions, but why did you think so? And so we can have a small dialogue, and usually the other children in the group come near, and sometimes we have some dialogue with the group, but it's a bit different between grown-up walkthroughs and walkthroughs with children. But I think it works quite good, and I've been doing it in a planning situation. I mean, I did walkthrough with 100 kids
wow.
in one school. And I mean, that was five school classes. So
yeah.
I took them class by class, and I made a documentation of it. And I could, what the children said, I could put right in the hands of the planners during the planning process. So it was quite useful for the planners and for me, and I think it was an adventure for the school children and the teacher. We always have the teacher with us when I do a walkthrough with school children. I think that's very important, because I mean, the teacher knows if there is someone who needs some extra care or something. I can have no idea about that if I'm just a stranger coming to them.
For 1 hour.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm very inspired by this method, and I tried actually only with the adult, not really with the children. Mm. And I want to ask you that. So the aim of this method is to get the evaluation of the citizens about a place.
Yes. And I mean, if I do a walkthrough evaluation with grown-ups, I am very, I think it's very important not to have more than 12 people. And to have a good room to sit in off after the walk, so we can have this calm dialogue for 1 hour or 1.5 hour, where we really can discuss what is problems and what, I mean, in this method, we ask what is good, what is bad, and suggestions for improvement. And usually evaluations that I saw in my dissertation was that evaluation want to put the finger on what's bad. And I think it's very important, if you are in a planning situation, it's very good to find out what people really like in the area before you go there and change things for them. It's important that you find out, oh, here we have some spring flowers that everyone in the whole area loves to come and see, and then it's not a good idea to dig them away. So if you want them to like the change you do in the area, it's very good to find out what's good. And suggestions for improvement is also very, very important to have from the users. So from the user perspective.
Mm. Susan, do you get, I think it's very important that in this method, we not only talk about the negative aspect, but the things that people like, and also how do we make it better, which is the important question.
Yeah.
Do you get a concrete example from the citizens about how do we make it better, or some abstract solutions?
I always want to have a group that is as mixed as possible. So I want to have users who live there or work there. I want to have the architect or planner or landscape architect or interior architect, depending on what kind of environment. And if you are going to make I mean, I've been doing some in some offices, and then you have the landlord or the one who is going to who is host. You want them all to come and to walk together, and then the dialogue will have the more widespread the backgrounds of the participants is, the more interesting views you get, and you also get very different character of the suggestions for improvement. So you can, I usually say you have, you get some suggestions that the maintenance personnel can fix the next day.
Wow.
I mean, and you can get suggestions for improvement that the owner can fix during during the year, and you can have things that you could, oh, this would be perfect to put in our 10-year plan for how to keep this environment good. And also for planners who participate, they get feedback what they were planning and what the result was, and so they have learned something for the next project. So you have very short time effects, and you have middle time effects, and you have future effects in future projects. So it could be, I mean, it could be that they don't have pavement. One of my first walkthroughs, it was a very newly built dwelling habitation, and where the bus stopped, they had no pavement, so it was a very high to jump down for the bus, or very difficult to enter the bus. And we had this walkthrough, and we had the planner, and we had people from the traffic office, and we had the dwellers who lived there, and they were really complaining about the loss of pavement. And then when I went there 1 year later, the pavement was there.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
the method can deliver different solution on different scales.
Yeah,
and time frames, which is really good. Do you require that the planners should be part of this walk with citizens, or only citizens? What is like the easiest?
I always want it to be a mix, because then you can really have a good dialogue. And I mean, in all other situations, you don't meet the architect and the planner when you are discussing, it's a very good opportunity for people who live there, and it's a fantastic opportunity for facility manager and for architects and for planners and for builders. All of them have a very good professional outcome of this. And those who live there, for them, it's something very extra.
Exactly. So I want to ask you, so first, like you announce about this walk together with municipality or land developer, then people show up and you go with you. Do you choose which people can go with you, or how do you choose the people? How do you select them?
Usually when I do a walkthrough, someone is paying for it. It could be a builder, a facility management, it could be a research project, or a planning project. So then we start my customer,
the client.
Yeah. We sit down and we discuss what are we doing evaluation of, what will the evaluation, is it a school indoor, is it a schoolyard, is it an office, is it a dwelling, a habitation, then it's always outside, I think. Is it a park? I mean, or is it to check availability for handicapped? I mean, it could be a very different focus. And then we say, who is the user? And then we, if the user is school children, then it's school children and teachers that we have as participants. If it's a habitation, it's people who live there, but also we want to mix them with the planners, the actual planner and architect that made the plan. So together with the customer, I sit down and decide who we are going to invite. And then, so I can say the most time consuming part of making a walkthrough evaluation is to invite everyone, to find the date and the time, and to find people who are willing to participate in a 1 hour walk through and a 1.5 hour dialogue afterwards. So they have to, at least 2 hours they have to offer.
yeah, from their time.
To participate.
How do you announce about this walkthrough? Do you like send emails, Facebook groups? How do you usually do it?
It's the same. I mean, it depends on what is the character of the project. If it's an habitation, you can ask. There is usually either a bostadsrättsförening or hyresgästförening. It's how can I say that in English?
Housing associations, something
yeah.
like this.
There is usually some local association, and you go to, you take contact with them, usually by phone. It's the easiest to explain everything, and ask them, would you like to offer your members to participate in this? And if they say yes, you can write a introducing letter that you send to them, and they distribute it, and you give them an email address or a phone number to tell if they would like to participate. So you have the people who live there, you have their accordance to come. And then all the specialists, you have to phone them, all of them, and explain. It takes a long time to make them understand. And since I've been working with it for many years, by now I'm a bit known about it, but still. And I also, there are some films on internet that you can see, so I can ask them, would you like to watch this 10-minute film, then you can see exactly what you will participate in.
So, yeah, it's a good way of inviting them.
Yeah, that part of the walkthrough is the most time consuming because you want to collect a good group. And when I work together with schools, it's also time consuming because you have to meet the headmaster and you have to meet the teachers and explain to them, and so they are not afraid.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have to assure them that they will have papers that parents can sign and everything. So
So the early phase or the start phase of this method is the most time consuming, actually.
Because
you're planning with the different stakeholders, with your client and so on, with the people as well.
And then also, the walks. If you only do one walk, it's 2-3 hours. But the preparing the papers for them to make notes and preparing the maps. I usually make a map so they can.
Yeah, tell me what material do you give to the people?
I have this.
We can call it a file or.
And here I put paper where they can write down. Here is the name and the date, and then what is good what is bad and suggestions for improvement. And I have this, this is the first place, the head entrance. This is the second place. This is the school lounge. And then the third, and you so have the fourth and the fifth. And
okay, so you divide them to different places, place one, yeah, two, three, yeah, and then yeah, bad, good, and the improvement suggestions.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And usually I have five stops because that's what you can do in 1 hour. You could have more stops, but then it will be more time consuming. Yeah. And on the back side of this,
yes,
I have the map of the walk.
Mm.
So here it's the school, and we have big numbers here of different places where you can stop.
Okay. Yeah. So you link the list with the map.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and when I have fix this, and when they have made the walk, they can have this map as a memory if they want to.
Yeah.
They can take them with them. They can take the map with them, and I take this. They will not.
The list. Yeah. So you provide the people or the kids with these two papers. The one, the list,
yeah,
with documentation, and the map.
Yeah. And if you do it out in the, this was from a school, but if you do it in where people live in the habitation, then they usually think it's very nice to have the map.
Yeah, of course, because it's a very special activity,
yeah,
that you do.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, how long can we walk? Can we walk all the city? How many hours can we walk? What is the best timing and scale of walking?
I think it's difficult to have people to accept to do very long seminars, or what we will call it. So 1 hour, then people think it's okay. And I mean, with the climate we have in Sweden, I've been doing walkthroughs in zero minus 20 degrees.
Wow.
And it's very cold, so you have to have gloves on your hands. And when you write, you can only have this usual pencil, because if you have any ink, it would freeze.
you remind me now of something really interesting. I was doing a walkthrough tour with people, yeah, and it started to rain. It was very cold, and suddenly the paper were just, you know, the ink went with the water and so on.
Yeah.
But hopefully I was listening to you, and I'm recording it, so yeah, I had a plan B. But it was like I was almost crying.
Yeah, but I learned that the hard way. I mean, this with the minus 20 degrees, yeah, that pencils is perfect. And I have my walkthrough evaluation kit with a lot of pencils. So if it's breaks, I just, oh, here is a new pencil.
Yeah.
And I also have in this walkthrough evaluation kit a bag with 15 umbrellas, small,
wow,
umbrellas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if the weather is a bit, you don't know, then I bring the umbrellas, and then, oh, here you are, an umbrella, and you have this place to write. And then I used to ask them to walk two and two. So one hold the umbrella
and
the other one is writing.
That's really, really good. Really,
yeah,
good.
That's part of my walkthrough kit.
Yeah, I love it. I think people really enjoy it. That's why they take the map, because they usually have a good experience.
Yeah.
Tell me about, okay, so you do the walk, you discuss, and then you take the papers from them.
Yeah.
How do you summarize and document everything?
I make a paper in a Word document where I write a short introduction where I tell who is arranging this and who is participating and what have we been looking at. Was it a school or an environment or whatever? And why did we do it? Was it for planning purposes? What is, was it for facility management of a school or an office? Or, I mean, all the initial information and who I am, and I was leading it, and we had 15 participants, and or we have 20 children in the sixth year or something. I mean, first this introduction, and then the map of the walk, and then a summary of what we learned. So for someone who is not interested in reading the whole paper, they can read what we did, and they can have the short summary, the main conclusions we had. And then after that, I have a picture of the first stop, of, if it's possible, with people standing writing, because that gives a very documentary feeling that you see that we did this the 15th of January 2021 or whatever the date was. So, and you can see the weather and the, if it's cold or if they are indoors, and watching chairs and tables and everything, you can see them doing it. And you can, so on the first stop, picture, and then summary, what they thought was good, what they thought was bad, and suggestions for improvement, or if it was for handicapped, what, how could you improve the availability?
Susan, do you write exactly what the people wrote, or you change the words according to how you read their? How do you do that?
If I asked, when I was doing it with 100 school children, you can understand that I had to do some kind of
I can imagine. Yeah,
because. So then I checked who was writing about the swings and who was positive about the swings, and someone negative about the swings. So I made, and some interesting comments, I write them as a citation, but mostly then I do a summary of, I mean, we stopped at a football area, and all the children loved the football area, both the girls and the boys, and they were using it together, taking different parts. So I summarize what I see and what they said. Yeah. I mean, so when it's like a lot of people watching the evaluating the same thing, then I really have to summarize it. When I have a small group of 15 or 12 people doing a walkthrough in, I've been doing it in a hospital area. It was outside in the hospital area. It was the documentation was not exactly what everyone said, but in general, a description and some citations that were total. So, I mean, you have this on tape, and you, I mean, if you have 10 people saying mostly the same thing, then you can say that most of them thought that this was very good because it was very practical or whatever was the.
Yes. So what, if we go back to the report, you mentioned the background, the map, and the more detail about every place. And what's then? If we go to the report that you write, so you say the, first the background about the project, then you put a map, and then you put details about people, what think about each place. Do you have more things to add to this report, or no, that's it?
No, I usually have this in the start. I have the summary, because then you still have a chance that the decision makers points. And then for those who are interested, they can read the the details, and I usually don't have any end comments. Perhaps I do it if it's needed, but.
What do you like most in this method, in doing this method? What is your favorite moment?
I think when you start the walkthrough, I mean, you have worked quite hard with preparing. You have to invite all the people, and you have to when you make the map and decide where to stop, you have to go there and do a test walk to see if you could do this walk in 1 hour and if it's okay. I mean, sometimes the map isn't correct and there is a fence or something, so you have to check that it's possible to walk. So when you are standing there and you say hello to everyone, and you have this grown-up group, and everyone is presenting themselves, so those who live or work there understands that they are standing with the architects and the facility manager and the and maintenance people, so everyone knows who they are. And they I go around and give them pencils and those writing device and so on, and we start the walk, and they start to chit chat a bit between each other, and someone say, well, I don't know much about this, what can I write? Yes, nothing is wrong, I tell them. You are here because you are an expert of living here, because you live here. Anything, what you like, what you don't like, nothing is wrong. And they sort of, oh, wow.
So this is your favorite part, actually, walking.
It. When they understand.
Yeah.
And I mean, in one walkthrough I made, I had some people who worked with outdoor lightning, you know, street lightning.
Yeah.
And they were two men, and they watched all the, how is this? They didn't look at all.
They just focus on the lighting.
Yeah. And it's okay, because the group is so mixed that they will hear things that have that is also important when you fix the lightnings.
Of course.
In another walkthrough, I had two policemen who participated, and they tried every door and see, oh, would it be possible to make a burglary here?
So everyone is looking from their own point of view.
Yeah.
And which is great because you have a mixed group.
Yeah, and I think that when you start and you have them understand that they can write and think whatever they like, and they start writing, and you go around and talk to them a bit, either with a microphone for an instant dialogue, or you ask them, please, if they tell me something they think, oh, this is very interesting with this door, please make a note, I tell them, because then when we sit in the room afterwards, you will remember to mention it. So they don't have to write everything, what was the very good, I mean, they don't have to write many words, they just make a notation. And then when we have the dialogue, we can
discuss it.
That's it. So, and when the weather is very cold, it's raining, then they write one word.
one letter.
nothing more, because the fingers.
It's cold. Yeah, it's freezing. Tell me, what is the challenges? What are the challenges that you're facing, and when is the toughest moment?
I mean, sometimes when I have invited people who live in an area And they have said that they would come, and then you stand there on the courtyard, and there is only one coming, and you're standing there. But I've always asked to have their phone numbers. So in one time in Västerås, we were standing between the houses, and there were one coming, and some architects and so on, but no, not more than one who lived there. And I phoned them from the court, and I had some more people coming down.
Yeah. It's a good advice.
So
have the phone numbers.
That was very challenging. And that's a good thing to remember, to have the phone numbers of those who will participate, because that could increase the participation.
Yeah, of course. Do you face any other challenges?
In the invitation moment, how to find people who will participate and have them accept to participate, that's also very much of a challenge. But I mean when you then know the method, I've been working with it for 25 years by now, I'm so safe, I know how to handle all those kind of catastrophes that could happen. I mean, rain and snow and people not coming, and I mean the door is locked or something like that. So I'm not nervous about that. And the documentation part, you decide together with the customer what kind of documentation that they need. So that's not very much of a challenge for me. But I mean, if you do a walkthrough evaluation for the first time, it's a terrible challenge. Everything is a challenge because you don't know really how to do it all. But in Swedish, I made a book. I made this book, which is in Swedish. I have not translated it in English, but here, I describe 20 years of walkthrough evaluation with different kinds of evaluations and different kinds of participants. And in the end of the book, there is a point-to-point description how to do the walkthrough evaluation.
It's like a guidebook.
Handbook. It's a handbook. Mm-hmm. And the size of it, it's so you could have it in a pocket, so you can have it with you. And then you are standing, oh, what shall I do now?
if no one shows up, open the book and read why. Yeah. I love it. It's really good.
Yeah.
Tell me, after all this journey, when you are done with the report or the documentation and you send it to the client, like municipality, land developer, do they really see this was really useful? Do you get feedback from them that, oh, we use this, thank you so much, Susan?
My customers has always been satisfied and paid for the work. So, some of them are coming back time after time. So I think, and I also been doing education for different companies and how to do walkthrough evaluation themselves, so they can do it. They don't have to phone me all the time because they want to do a lot of walkthroughs. So I make a course where they I present the method, and then they, in the course, they will do a walkthrough evaluation themselves, and I help them, and we do the walkthrough. They plan the walkthrough, and we decide together where to stop, and then we do the walkthrough, and they invite some users, and then we have the dialogue, and then either I do the documentation or they do the documentation. That depends on how they would like it to be.
Yeah.
And they are forced to read this book.
Your book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see people or the clients are more willing to do this method than before?
Yes, I think, I've been working with it for 25 years. And then when I did my doctoral dissertation in 1997, I thought, oh, now I have this book and everyone will understand how good this walkthrough evaluation is. And I was sort of running right into a wall. Nothing happened. I had a friend who is in a wheelchair, and I made some lectures for different groups. And I have one friend in a wheelchair, and she invited me to do walkthrough evaluation. And we did two wheelchair walkthroughs in Gävle. And it was really interesting. And that was when that was early in my experience of walkthroughs. And I understood that the method is extremely useful for all kind of handicaps, because you really see the truth when you try to enter a company or anything. You have this handicap
button
to press. And then you shall either, if you have a machine driven wheelchair, but usually you press and you have to back, and then you should go forwards. And often there is many doors, so one door open and then the next door open. But sometimes, and too often, it takes too long time with a wheelchair, so the doors could lock in front of you. The first open So very often there is problem to really make an entrance with that proper wheelchair. And you have to do some checking with the program for the doors so they open, so it works for wheelchairs. And a pavement, the step up to a pavement, it was quite terrible when we did this first walkthrough, because we were out in the habitation in Gävle, and the step from the street to the pavement was quite high. Mm-hmm. And the participant had really big motor drive and wheelchair, and we were standing there, oh, it will
it will fall down or fall back.
You really understand that there are big problems for handicaps.
Yeah, exactly. And but now, as I understand, people are more open to this method.
Yes, I've been working with it for many years, and now I have more and more who want to have courses and who want to have a walkthrough. And the last years, I've also finally succeeded in entering schools and have school children. I have had problems. If I come to a school myself and ask, yeah, can I do a walkthrough, then the teacher say, well, we don't have time because we have a much schedule, so you cannot have 1 or 2 hours. No, they say. But if I ask the planning office or the school office in a local administration, if they tell the headmaster of a school, now we have a project where the school administration have decided that your schools shall participate in this project, then the headmaster says yes, and I can phone the headmaster and we can do it.
So you need to have an okay or a process for the municipality, the school, the headmaster, until you get proved that you can go there.
Yeah. So it's one of the problems. But now I've been doing that, and I've been doing research project and planning project, and have this authorization, and it's fantastic to use this method that I
talking about schools and children. Now we talked about this method, but a lot from the adult's point of view. When we do it to children, what should we think about? If you can give us some advices.
Children are, the different ages of children, they are very different. And I've been doing walkthroughs with children in the second class. Then they can write and they can do walkthrough evaluation. But younger children, if you do walkthrough with younger children, they cannot write. So you just have to walk and talk with them. And that works, but you have to do some, make it easier. And you don't make a map, and you walk with them, and you ask them to point what is good or bad and so on. So you really have to adapt to the age of children. But when the children are 10, 11 years old, they are very much like adults. So it's not much different. The difference is more about the time schedule of school, that they won't let you have the children for more than 1 hour.
I understand. Yeah. So tell me, Bia, you're also apart from an international network. Tell us more about this network. What do you do? How can we join this network?
I'm part of first of a Swedish network, ARKIS, which is concerning about built environment education, and that is within the Swedish Association of Architects, Sveriges Arkitekter. So I'm a member of this group, and now we are called Rådet för Arkitektur och Barn, the Council for Architecture and Children in the Swedish Association of Architects. But for 20 years I was chairperson of this ARKIS, which is the same thing, this council now. During the years I joined an international network which is organized by UIA, that's the International Union of Architects Associations. So the Swedish Association of Architects is member of this UIA, the International Association of Architects. And the UIA, the International Association of Architects, has work programs, different work programs for cultural heritage and for catastrophe help. And we also have this work program for architecture and children. And this work program is, since 2017, I'm co-director of this work program together with a wonderful lady from Egypt called Heba Safei Eldin. So we two are the co-directors of this program, and we now with this Teams and Zoom and so on, we can have very close contact, even though we live very far away from each other. And luckily, Egypt and Sweden has almost the same clock time.
Yeah, the time zone is very close. Yeah.
More problems with our members in Japan or Brazil.
I imagine.
Because when we arrange meetings now, in Corona time, we have these meetings in Zoom, and we have to choose a time in the middle, because for the Japanese and Taiwanese and Koreans, it's 11 o'clock in the evening.
Wow.
And for the Costa Rica, Brazil, and Mexico, it's very early in the morning.
So someone should suffer.
Yes, so we have had some meetings and they have been very fruitful with a lot of people participating. Before Corona, we had meetings in real IRL, IRL. And the last meeting was in November 2019, that must be, in Helsinki. It was a combined conference on built environment education for 2 days with workshops and seminars. And we also have a 2 day meeting with our work program. And I think we had 40 members from at least 35 countries or something in Helsinki. So it's a fantastic forum for sharing experience and learning from each other. And our last meeting on Zoom, we had presentations from different countries about how we work with children in COVID time and how to reach children. It was one lecture from Brazil and one from Bulgaria, and they could, the Bulgarian Magdalena Radjiva, she could give ideas for the Brazilian how to reach poor children who don't have computers and they don't have phones, and you cannot reach them when you're not allowed to go there and see them. So she told that they have collected the e-phone mobile numbers to someone who lived in the area, and so they could make a contact with that person and have a contact with the children. So it was really fantastic we could help each other with good advice.
Yeah, how can we be part of this network? Is it open for everyone, or how is it to apply and be part of it?
The network is we have from the different architects associations, member associations, they have someone representing their architecture association. And I mean, since before Corona, they had to pay something for the travels for us to meet. So it's not everyone can be a full member of this work program, but we have a Facebook group, a Facebook page where you can follow what we do, and we try to put out good examples and so on. And we also have a website more presenting the different countries and so on. But if you are very interested in this question, and if you have contact, you don't have to be an architect, but you have to have contact with a national architect organization. And if they are members, and you can find that out on the UIA website, you can ask them to nominate you or someone else, preferably an architect, to become a member.
Yeah. So if I understand it correctly, you can be part of this, but you need like to go through your association, like architecture association.
Yeah, and the group is now growing with more and more countries, and it was 10 or 15 countries, and now we have almost 40 countries, and wow. Our meetings become bigger and bigger, and we have to think a bit how we can manage such a lot of people.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's a good sign that you're doing a good work.
We have a very positive problem. Yeah.
Well, it's good to know about the different fields that you work with in order to create a child-friendly city. I'm also working with this approach in my daily life. And I want to ask you, because in this podcast, we talk about smart city, future city, what is it about? I would love to ask you, Do you believe that technology can help us to create a child-friendly city?
Yes and no. I have some notes here because I don't remember all names, but you know, there are computer games that children can use. Minecraft is from Sweden and has become very much used all around the world. And it has also been used by UNESCO, or I think by them, to as a help for children to participate in planning. And there are also some examples from Sweden where children have participated in planning via Minecraft. So, and Lantmäteriverket, I had no idea what they called in English, but they provide Sweden with maps. they have made digital maps that they offer for Minecraft users, or I think all over Sweden now, so you can make suggestions on real maps. So that I don't really know if the cities will be child friendly when the children use the maps and build the towers and other houses, but the possibility exists, of course. And I've been studying a school class in Vaxholm, where I formerly lived, where the school children of second year worked with Minecraft, and they met the planner from the local planning office, and he told them about planning. I mean, they second class, 8 years old, and they were asked to plan Vaxholm in Minecraft. But together with, they had two very young male teachers who were very eager on Minecraft. They fixed all the small children had Mac computers, and they made a network. And the children made maps of Vaxholm, and they built houses and schools and everything. And they made suggestions for this. I mean, Vaxholm is a little town with 2,000 inhabitants, so it's really small. And one of the boys, he thought that they should have underground in Vaxholm. And two of the girls, they were very annoyed about habitation for senior citizens, that the view from the window was to the churchyard, so when they looked out, they could
the graves,
see
yeah.
next they could see the next station for their life, and they thought that was terrible, and they moved the house for senior citizens so they could see the sea instead. So that was not child friendly, but elder friendly. Yeah. The yeah. children were suggesting it.
So technology can be a way to get closer to kids and see what they like to see in their cities.
Yeah, and you know, there are other programs like Roblox and Blockland and Cube World and Block Story and other. There are so many computer programs that children can use. But I think Minecraft has gone the longest way. There was a competition called Future City, where all schools grade 6 to 9 were invited to participate. And they use Minecraft, and the children made Minecraft films from a future city, and they wrote a little essays, and they were also building physical models. And that started in 2004, and they made it from until 2018, and then they made a pause. But now I phoned the arranger and asked what happened to Future City, and then they said, we made a pause, but we will invite everyone in 2021 for a new issue of Future City. And I think that's very good. And in in the Future City concept, they have, when the jury is working, it's people working in the building, I mean, builders and planners and so on, building industry, they come and they meet the school children, and the meeting between the children and the professionals, and the children explaining their city to the professionals, and the professionals asking questions, did you think of this? And so and that meeting is magic.
Of course, magic. Of course. I love it. I love it, of course. And you say
so
that, so you said like technology, yes and no. Give me the no.
The no is that the computer programs, I mean, the cubes are blocks, and they build. It's like Lego. You build something, but then all the other issues about how to live and what is livable and what is wonderful and so on is, I mean, it's pure mathematics. And I don't think that mathematic programs can, there is no guarantee that the child friendliness will be thought of. And I mean, we have problems with traffic contra children, and in planning it's terrible because the law says that the children should be prioritized before cars, but in reality money talks and the cars will always be prioritized anyhow, even though the Swedish law and the convention of the
child's rights.
Child's right also says that the children should be prioritized, but still they will not, they in the practical reality it doesn't work. So child friendly city is I think it's very good to try to make a child-friendly city and to find ways to do it and to talk about it all the time. So but we cannot think that that's enough, and Minecraft is not enough.
I understand. Even the use
of it is it's good that you do it, but it won't do the whole thing.
You also
have the political and the economical side that you have to, they have to be on the spot also.
Yeah, exactly. So the games or the tools, the digital tools are not enough to create something. You need also to work even more with the other aspects. Susanne, tell me, why do we need to involve kids? I mean, they're kids. Will they really contribute to our future cities? Why do we need them?
The first word, future, is the answer. Who is going to be the grown-ups in the future?
The kids.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you, as early as possible, have the tools and have the words to talk about this and have an understanding of what town planning and how you could participate, so you have a tool, so you know what the law says and what a city is and what you could have an impact on. It's really, I think it's It's important to have grown-ups to understand, but it's even more important to teach the children and help them and give them tools and inspiration. Because it's fun. If you work with, you build mid models or you go out and investigate why did this become like this, and perhaps you go to the planners and ask them, what did you do, why is it like this, or you meet the politician and you can ask them good questions.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know what, Susan, you're very smart. You played with the word of a future. You know, every time when I am like with a client, with other people, or in the university when I teach, so I try to say why we are doing this and why should we do that. But now today you give like a very simple answer with just playing with one word, which is the future. I'm really happy that it this one was very inspiring. Thank you so much, Susan. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I would love that we end the conversation with asking if you can give us 3 takeaway messages to all the listeners.
Yeah, I made some notes. I have to look here. I think something that's extremely important when you talk about planning and architecture and so on is home, or the German word Heimat. It's not dwellings or habitation, it's home. You feel home, and I think to have respect for that when you go out in a democratic process or a planning process, that's very important. And with suburbs that are people think they are not good, I think you are very rude when you don't think of that this suburb is someone's home where they grow up. And I think that's extremely important that you respect them, because then you can also, you can have suggestions from them, and you shall respect those suggestions. So I think that's the key to have them have a better reputation. So the attitude about planning and architecture, I think that's something I would like to say to all planners and architects, that they have to have a respectful attitude towards the users. And for me, I think a dialogue, the respect and the dialogue, they are very near each other.
Thank you so much, Susan. You, and I would love to get also one question from you for us to reflect.
What I would like to say is that the definition of a dialogue is that you listen to someone and that you learn something. And in the dialogue, you also develop understanding both ways. I think if you think of that definition of dialogue, then it's easier to have a dialogue, because both parties should have a say, and you should have a chance to come back, and perhaps you change your mind during the dialogue. I mean, that would be the very good thing if you can. It's a different, I think for me, the dialogue is really the most important thing to really try to develop methods for having a good dialogue.
And also giving a space for people to express themselves, and for us even to develop the content and the plans.
Yeah.
Well, Susan, thank you so much again. So what is the next step for you after leaving this podcast recording? What are you going to do in the next day, in the future? What's the plan?
Yeah, I'm since I work in this UIA work program, Architecture and Children, I've been invited to participate in an Italian seminar upon school planning in Italy. So I'm going to give a short lecture and participate in the round table in Italian, or it will be transcribed to Italian, so I will speak English.
That's amazing. Good luck.
Yeah.
So thank you, and hopefully talk with you again with more topic and about different in different fields. Thank you so much again, Susanna.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for listening to Urbanistica podcast. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. You learned something new and also got inspired by the guest. Don't forget to share the episode on your social media and recommend it to people you think they are really interested in this topic. Thank you so much again for giving your valuable time to Urbanistica podcast. I am Mustafa Sharif. Keep up the good work. Keep loving cities.